Last year on Father's Day, I preached a sermon on the sacred masculine, in which I invited us to consider that most of us, irrespective of our biological sex, have some masculine aspects of ourselves as well as some feminine aspects. To use classical archetypes, masculine energy is often described as bright, hot, hard, active, above, up, external, and solid. Feminine energy, in turn, is traditionally described as dark, cool, soft, still, down, interior, and empty. The perceived value of those two words is too often shaped by our culture's misogyny, sexism, and heteronormativity. The invitation, however, is to experience the sense in which almost everyone has the potential to realize a healthy masculinity and a healthy femininity within themselves over the course of a lifetime. There are times when each of us needs to run bright, hot, hard, active, above, up, and external, and times when we need to turn inward to the dark, cool, soft, still, down, and empty. And part of the journey toward maturity of an adult spirituality is to become more conscious of what previously dwelled only in our unconscious, which includes becoming increasingly aware of our inner masculine and our inner feminine. Unhealthy masculinity, as we saw in such an extreme way in Elliot Rodgers' mass shooting, tends to be deeply narcissistic, acting impulsively without considering the impact on others. This chauvinistic style of masculinity is one-sided and characterized by power over instead of power with. And one of the most important parts of Yes, All Women and Each, Every Woman hashtags is that they are raising awareness of how widespread and commonplace sexism, harassment, and abuse of women is. These hashtags are also giving men and women permission, sometimes for the first time, to speak the truth publicly. In the long run, silence allows the sexist status quo to persist unchallenged. But speaking up often carries with it risks. And I want to be sure to say that locally we have an important resource called Hartley House, which serves Frederick County residents who have been impacted by domestic violence, sexual assault, and child abuse. Hartley House has been providing comprehensive services for over 30 years in our community, a 24-hour hotline, an emergency shelter, individual and group counseling, victim advocate services and legal representation, medical advocacy services for victims of sexual assault, abuser intervention groups, transitional housing, community outreach, and professional education. Hartley House, being able to Google those two words or encouraging somebody to Google can be pivotally helpful in some situations. If you or someone you know is at risk, I encourage you to contact. It's hartleyhouse.org. As reported in the New York Times, the statistics on violence and discrimination against women are just staggering. The United Nations Entity on Gender Equality and the Empowerment of Women has reported that, according to the 2013 Global View of Available Data, 35%, more than a third of women worldwide, have experienced intimate partner violence or non-partner sexual violence. In Australia, Canada, Israel, South Africa, and the United States, violence by intimate partners accounts for between 40% and 70% of all murders of women. More than 64 million girls worldwide, 64 million, are child brides. 46% of women 20 to 24 in South Asia and 41% of West and Central Africa report that they are married before age 18. Approximately 140 million girls and women in the world have suffered female genital mutilation or cutting. In the United States, 83% of girls 12 to 16 have experienced some form of sexual harassment in public schools. Women are already 2 to 4 times more likely than men to become infected with HIV during intercourse. Rape increases the risk because of limited condom use and physical injuries. In the U.S., 11.8% of new HIV infections in the previous year among women 20 or older were attributed to intimate partner violence. As some of you have heard me quote before from Parker Palmer, when we hear statistics like those, or when we hear tragic headlines like coming out of Isla Vista 3 weeks ago, our heart breaks. But Palmer says there are two ways for the heart to break: apart into many shards like a fragment grenade, or open into greater capacity so that we can hold life's inevitable tensions creatively, not destructively. And one prominent reaction to the surge of all those "yes, all women" tweets was the overly defensive creation of "not all men." I suspect that some of you can see how this hashtag indicates a potentially narcissistic, toxic masculinity. "Yes, all women" was never saying "yes, all men." But "not all men" takes a powerful viral moment of women sharing their experience and immediately tries to make it about men's perspectives, of wanting to make sure everyone knows that they're one of the good guys. I recognize that "not all men" likely is well-intended, but intention does not always equal impact. Your intention does not always equal your impact on another person. The invitation, perhaps, is to ask, what's underneath that impulse of some men to make "yes, all women" about their experience of instead of allowing your heart to simply be broken open in compassion? It's what Carol was talking about during Joys and Sorrows, just allowing your heart to be open in compassion to the other in front of you. Out of such deep listening to another's pain, authentic transformation can occur. And I offer this example for us, including myself, to become more aware of when we move too quickly from listening to another's experience to sharing about our own. Sometimes it's not about you, Narcissus, right? We can learn to stop ourselves on these occasions and learn to say, wait, this is actually not about me. And allow yourself to simply be present to the one before you in pain. A more positive, open-hearted approach emerged of the hashtag AllMenCan. This is probably going to peak as my most Twitter references in a sermon. So sorry for those who are slightly confused about what I'm talking about. Instead of the defensive "not all men," "all men can" spoke of concrete steps of men saying, here's how we can create a more feminist masculinity. All men can treat women as equals. All men can challenge and dismantle patriarchy, empower women, stop objectifying women, and understand that a dress is not a yes. It's vital to name that a feminist masculinity is so much healthier for men as well as women compared to the toxic, patriarchal masculinity that demands that men must always, and I know you can hear these words because you've heard them before, that men must always stop crying, be cool, don't be weak, don't be a little girl, right? There's other words we could substitute in there. Be a man and man up. And although there are responsible, respectful, women-affirming gun owners in this country, that's certainly the case. It's no coincidence that the Rogers mass shooting is only the latest tragic example that this sort of toxic masculinity often fetishizes guns in disturbing ways. And you don't have to be a Jungian analyst to see that guns are a phallic symbol in these cases, used on the surface as a defense against physical vulnerability, but which underneath may be well just as much a defense against emotional vulnerability and putting a huge wall with that gun slinged over your shoulder. The result of this patriarchal masculinity, it trains men to spend their lives as emotional infants. In contrast, Bell Hooks writes that feminist masculinity affirms men that you don't have to do and perform to be affirmed and loved. That's a radical statement for most men, including myself, who often, even though we know better, still find ourselves feeling like we have to constantly work and to earn and be worthy of love and respect. You can't just be. And that's that lack of being in touch with your inner feminine. The stereotype, of course, is the male workaholic who exhausts himself every day to be worthy of his family's love and respect, because he doesn't feel it intrinsically, comes home exhausted with no time or energy to spend with his partner or kids, zones out in front of the television or through drugs or alcohol, only to start the vicious workaholic cycle over the next day. Feminist masculinity is a perspective that says you don't have to maintain that constant, impenetrable stance of power over, that you're always in control. It invites men to see that we're all in this together. We can share the work, we can share the rest, and we can all share the play. That's power with. That's partnership instead of patriarchy. Megan ended her reflection with the hope that men and women will demand better for ourselves and for our children. Don't we owe them a safer world than the one handed down to us? There's so much more to say about all the ways we can help build a better world. For now, I will move to my conclusion by naming only a few concrete steps we can begin to take. I also invite you to share with me later the ways in which you have found for creating a world, for fathering and parenting our children in ways that give each individual permission to create a healthy masculinity, a healthy femininity, and every combination in between. For me, feminist masculinity looks like celebrating that the Reverend Dr. Amy Butler, my former colleague with the Alliance of Baptists, was called last Sunday to be the first female senior pastor at one of the most important pulpits in this country, the historic Riverside Church in New York City. We need to savor those times when change and progress happen. Feminist masculinity looks like teaching boys and men that women's bodies do not exist as constant sexual objects. One example is teaching that public breastfeeding is natural and neither offensive nor an invitation for ogling. One of the many blatant double standards in our society is that any man, no matter his physical condition, can walk around almost anywhere with his shirt totally off. But in most places, a woman would be arrested for doing so. And I'm assuming that two words will suffice about what Freud would say about grown men who are scandalized by public breastfeeding. You might guess, mommy issues, right? Take it up with your therapist, not with that woman simply trying to feed her child. Feminist masculinity looks like a blog post from one of my colleagues who teaches her son, and she wishes we didn't live in a world like this, but she knows that we do, teaching her sons as they begin to be grown men with big bodies to be aware that especially at night or in isolated areas, they can unintentionally threaten women if they are walking behind them, and often men walk faster than women. So she teaches her sons in such situations that she wishes she didn't have to say it, but they need to cross to the other side of the street to make that woman feel safer. Feminist masculinity looks like being careful of saying boys will be boys as an excuse. For one thing, I have too many friends who are parents of girls that I could call right up here to testify that girls can be equally as gross, destructive, and hyperactive as any boy. Children will be children. Feminist masculinity looks like the beautiful outdoor wedding that I officiated at yesterday, in which tears were at many moments streaming down the face of the bride and the groom. That the father of the groom came forward in the middle of the ceremony with a Kleenex for the bride and for his son, crying unabashedly, joyfully, and without shame. On that note, I'll end with perhaps the most obvious and most important. Feminist masculinity looks like teaching our boys and men the practice of naming your feelings. I feel like we need to mail a feelings chart to every, with the little faces and this is what the feeling is, to all the men in our culture so they can just name your feelings out loud instead of keeping them locked up inside, simply naming when you are happy, sad, afraid, angry, jealous, frightened, nervous, ashamed, worried. And it looks like giving yourself permission to cry. I've had so many people come to my office over the years, both male and female, start to cry and say, "I'm sorry that I'm crying." And I understand that impulse. But allow me to say publicly what I tell individuals privately. Follow the tears. Follow the tears. The way out is through what you're feeling. Let your emotions out. Give yourself time and space to process them and over time to integrate them. Keeping your feelings repressed and compartmentalized results in those emotional infants who, in the most extreme cases, lash out and kill others because they have never learned healthy ways of emotionally connecting and of being vulnerable. If you need some practice, go see the new film, The Fault in Our Stars. Has anybody seen it? Really? Okay, a few. Okay. Many other people have, if you look at the box office results. One reviewer said of this film, "As I watched this movie, I felt all the feelings." As we learn to be honest and transparent about what we are feeling, may we, in the words of Bell Hooks, support one another with open hearts and open arms. Together, may we build a world, a beloved community, in which all of our boys and girls, our men and women, can point to themselves and say, this is what a feminist looks like.